to 97.1 The Ticket. Happy Wednesday, everybody. All right, let's swing around the country. A little college football blitz thingy. Heads or tails, Gator?
Heads.
Heads he calls, and it is a tail. Let's go ahead and receive.
All right, Doug, you ready?
I am.
Question number one. There's angst in Ann Arbor, but you know that already, Doug. Mm-hmm. But what about Florida State? They were 12-0 last year on the verge of a college football playoff. Since then, they've lost 7 of 8 games. What's going on there?
So it's really hard to believe how bad it is that they are 1-6, and they look authentically 1-6. The head coach, Mike Norvell, said this week that they didn't handle getting left out of the college football playoff very well. And the way I interpret that, when I look at all the noise out of Florida State in the offseason, this was a university that was suing to try and get out of their conference. They were blaming the conference for the reason they didn't get into the college football playoff. And that tells me there was too much energy, perhaps when the coach says that, too much energy spent on worrying about all of that and not enough energy on the, okay, we're going back to work and leave no doubt approach moving forward. When a coach says that, and look, I mean, I'm glad he's willing to look in the mirror and say, here's what went wrong. But I'm going to go that's what happened there. They've spent too much time worrying about the system on an administrative level all the way on down and not enough about getting back to business.
I can't help but think that there has to be something behind the scenes with what happened after they lost their quarterback last year and the way they handled that situation, that it rubbed some players the wrong way, that maybe they thought other guys should have gotten chances or whatever, because there's just too much attrition. You've got the guys that went to the NFL, and they were in key positions and phenomenal players. You had the first-round players, Jared Verse and Fisk, and then you've got the receivers, Keon Coleman and the other receiver, the quarterback himself. Lots of attrition, and they're not a big-time blue-blood program anymore. They're not. They're not Alabama. They're not Ohio State. They're not LSU. They're not reloading. So when you lose those guys, and then, like I said, I think there's something behind the scenes that happened. So there's a mass exodus from the program. Coach is unable to hang on to those guys. Then you're not replenishing with the portal, with the top-end portal guys, and you're having to rely on freshmen and sophomores. It is the perfect storm for having a bad season. But I don't think anybody thought it was going to be this bad.
No, this is pretty horrific. I do believe there is some hangover effect from last year, the spending time and energy onto it, Doug. You're onto something there. The players, the coaches that are still here from last year feeling the effects, they could have used this as an advantage, like a chip on the shoulder thing, but it's gone completely the other way. But really, the biggest reason is, and it's the same as Michigan, actually, and a lot of programs, no quarterback, no college football playoff, man. DJ, you better get a real job. It's not the answer. It ain't working, clearly. And then they went to the other quarterback, and he gets hurt, and now they're on the other quarterback. If you don't have a quarterback in college football or professional football, which college football is basically now, it's going to be a rough sailing for you. All right, Gator, your thoughts on what happened last Saturday night in Austin, Texas, Georgia beating Texas?
Not a pretty game. By any means, and Georgia wins with 30-15, couple of touchdowns there. It's weird because you look at statistically, and Carson Beck throws 3 interceptions in the game. Georgia's offense has less than 300 yards, and how are they scoring 30 points? How are they winning by 2 touchdowns? Well, Texas averaged 1 yard a carry. 1 yard a carry. They also had less than 300 yards, and they lost 3 fumbles. That is horrific. So it's a nightmare of a game for Texas. It's a great game for Georgia. There's controversy in that game as well. I don't know if I can explain it. If these two teams played again, would it be the same result? Probably not. I think both teams would, I think Texas would love to get their hands on Georgia again, just like Georgia would love to get Alabama again.
A lot of what you said, I kind of had noted on this one. I'll give you something else, too. I saw Steve Sarkisian, head coach of Texas, on College Game Day. And he was sitting there telling them, here's what we do that's so effective. Here's how we run this. Here's how we run that. They had videos up and all that. And I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? I thought it was one of the most, it was interesting, but I was sitting there watching it going, is he giving away the game plan? Like, it felt really like too much. There was a certain, I don't know. I was surprised that he did it. And maybe it had nothing to do with anything. But I was really shocked at how forward he was about what they were going to do.
Too much Scottie Scheffler?
I don't know what that means.
Well, I think Scottie Scheffler was the guest picker, wasn't he?
Was he? Okay, I didn't see that.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's all right.
So the weird thing is, the biggest thing that stood out to me from that game was the whole fans throwing the bottles onto the field when the whole pass interference. What was the call? I can't even remember anymore.
Pass interference. Pass interference,
was it? Yeah, it was. And then the call got overturned after the delay from them cleaning up the bottles and everything. And I thought, it worked.
Yeah.
It actually worked.
Yeah.
And you're rewarding bad behavior from fans. Now, later on in the week, they announced a big hefty fine for Texas. But I don't know. Maybe should there be a penalty, you know, for that home team to get so their fans don't do things like that? And it's not like, oh, one bottle comes on the field, a penalty right away. But something, you know, really over the top, like what the fans did at that game. I thought that was kind of ridiculous, even though they got technically the call right.
You know what that sounds like? A question for next week's college football question.
And also, Kirby Smart, another thing that stood out after the game, that post-game interview. Someone was salty. Someone was pissed that people picked against your team. Dude, how long have you been doing this? Big-time football. Hey, people are going to pick against you at some point.
Nobody thought Georgia was going to win eight games
nobody
a couple
plays
years
that
ago.
Kirby Smart with a telling his team people are picking us to lose 5-6 games.
Man.
He oversells.
All right. All right, CBS Sports confirmed last week that the Big Ten and the SEC were in, you know, preliminary talks to play non-conference games against each other. This is a way to enhance the schedule. Your thoughts on this?
I don't know that you need to. This is a way to make more money. This is a way to get higher TV ratings. This is a way to keep your network partners happy. And keeping the network partners happy has led to Michigan State playing virtually their entire schedule at night. Like, it's amazing how much that the B1G and the SEC is just basically acquiesce the power to the TV networks. But I'll say this, with the strength of schedule thing, we're going to see a two-loss national champion before we see another undefeated national champion.
Oh, my. I like that bold take. And you're probably not off on that. Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah, there you go. Listen, I love that they're going to schedule games against each other because for the fans, it's so much better. But the real reason they're doing it is exactly what you said. It's for money and it's also for power. Right, they get the separate TV deal, they get the money, and also you know what's going to happen. You know that this is just a precursor so that they can lobby the college football playoff to ensure that each conference gets four teams in the college football playoff and everybody else is playing for four other spots. That's what's going to happen because that's how these big conferences are thinking. The disparity between the have and have-nots is such a canyonist gap, and it's only going to get larger with these two conferences. I hate it.
Yeah, they're doing this for three reasons, guys. One, money.
Yeah,
two,
money.
Power.
Oh, okay.
Three, money.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, this is, you know, they don't care about, you know, the college football fan anymore as far as what they want and what college football meant to a lot of people and the differences between amateur football and professional football. If you're going to do something like this, I say, all right, fine, at least get rid of those early season cupcakes, the SEC schedules, and especially those late season cupcakes, the SEC schedules, you know, to get them ready for the real big games. All right, can undefeated 24th-ranked Navy beat 12th-ranked 6-1 Notre Dame this Saturday?
Yes. They can. Okay, first of all, when you're Notre Dame, you got a target on your back every single week because every team hates you, every team wants to beat you, and every team has their rival, and then if Notre Dame's on their schedule, that's the second rival, even if you have no history with it. Navy has history with Notre Dame. Horvath, the quarterback, is awfully good. Now, because he's a service academy quarterback, he's going to run the ball a ton, and he does. And he averages like 7 or 8 yards a carry. He's got 10 touchdowns already on the ground. But interestingly enough, he's also thrown for over 800 yards. In fact, it's only 300 yards less than what Riley Leonard has thrown for at Notre Dame. He's thrown for 10 touchdowns at Navy. Riley Leonard has thrown for 6. He's thrown 1 pick. Riley Leonard has 3 picks. Navy has a real shot in this game. I know they're, I think, 13.5-point dogs. I would take them with the points. The service academies are legit this year. This is going to be a fun year to watch when Army and Navy play at the end of the season. It's not just, oh, I'm going to watch it because of national pride. You're going to watch because it's going to be a damn good football game. Both of those teams have legit shots of upending Notre Dame, and Navy gets the first shot at it.
Dude, they could end up in the playoff. I mean, this is your typical Navy team, as you pointed out. The midshipmen are averaging 11.93 yards per attempt through the air.
Yes.
That's number 2 in the country. Their yards per completion, 19.32. That's number 2 in the country.
Is it behind Army?
Notre Dame has been, yeah, it actually is. Notre Dame has been very good against the pass and quarterback rating against, not as good against the run. To be fair, neither of them played a tough schedule, Notre Dame nor Army.
No.
Or Navy, rather. But certainly they could win that game.
Oh, they can absolutely win that game. I mean, they can attack you through the land, air, and sea, guys. All right, Notre Dame, obviously, I got Notre Dame winning this game, but they're not unbeatable, and especially a team that lost to Northern Illinois. You know, the more that college football goes towards this NFL, I'm going to bring it up all the time because they're going through this NFL model, is any given Saturday is a more real thing than it was, you know, 10, 20 years ago. So, yeah, Notre Dame, I got them winning, but Navy can absolutely beat them, and I'm rooting for them.
Go Middies.
All right, two big injuries in the Big Ten. Ohio State loses a left tackle, Josh Simmons, and for the season. IU loses their quarterback, though, for several weeks to a thumb injury. Which will prove more costly for these teams?
On the surface, I was going to say Simmons because there's a legit concern about their depth at tackle. They're probably going to move some people around. But Indiana plays Washington, Michigan State, Michigan, and Ohio State. And even though some of those teams are down, those still aren't easy games. So I'm going to say Rourke because I think it probably will cost him a game. The Simmons thing probably won't become an issue until the postseason for them, given their schedule. So I'm going to go the Rourke injury hurts Indiana more.
I will say that it's the Rourke injury because he's a quarterback. And look, Cignetti's got this thing rolling really good in his first season at IU, but it's his first season at IU. You know, their backup quarterback, is it Taven Jackson, transfer from Tennessee? He's gone in limited duty and he's played really well there. But against Washington, this is a good program, so they're going to be tested this week. I just think it's a steep hill for them to climb. It's a steeper hill than Ohio State, which is one of those blue blood programs that does reload. So do they have a left tackle that can step in and a talented player? Absolutely. Will he be as good? No, but they can absorb it better than, say, Indiana trying to absorb the injury to their quarterback, which has been their leader this year.
Yeah, clearly for me, it's Indiana losing Rourke at quarterback. See my above answer to question number one about not having a quarterback in college football. Yeah. I mean, it's a big, big deal, especially for a school like Indiana. So that'll hurt them more than Ohio State's injury. All right, Doug and John went to Purdue, Oregon last Thursday. People know Doug loves Purdue, but he claims he doesn't. All right, but what non-local college football program do you low-key root for?
All right, so I've made no mistake. I'm a huge BYU fan. All right, yeah. No bones about it. So I'm not going to say BYU because everybody kind of knows that I've been a BYU fan since the days of Jim McMahon and Mark Wilson, even before him in the late 70s. But you may not know, I'm a low-key LSU fan.
Oh, I didn't know that. Mm.
I have loved LSU since Cajun I can Gator. Remember watching football. It's the field. It's the different color, the striping of the field, the numeration every 5 yards, not every 10 yards. It's the damn tiger that
the tiger
they have
eye.
Outside there. He's awesome. The tiger eye in the center field, in the midfield. It's the fact that they had in the movie Everybody's All-American with Dennis Quaid, the galloping ghost, Gavin Gray, and that was about it. I mean, I love this team.
Yeah, it's not low key anymore.
Not anymore. It's out.
All right, I'm going
to let the tiger out of the cage.
I got two.
And Tommy Hodson, baby.
I got two. I got Colorado, and I
Purdue.
Liked them before they were cool.
Yeah, we know Purdue.
Oh, yeah.
I liked them before they were cool, before like Deion got there.
Did you like him when they were breaking your heart at Michigan?
I didn't love that moment, but I do. I've always kind of liked the Colorado program, and part of it has to do with the gold helmets and the black pants when they're on the road. I think it looks sweet.
It's a good look.
I do have an FCS team too, the Montana Grizzlies. I'm a Grizzly fan. Go figure. I chose the Grizzlies over the Bobcats when I was deciding which Montana team I was going to root for.
So when I really fell in love with sports was mid to late 90s, and back then Florida State was the team. All right, yeah. I mean, I don't say it out loud. I don't think I have any Florida State gear. But honestly, one of the reasons why I loved Florida State was I loved the Tomahawk Chop. I actually liked the Braves. They were good in the mid 90s, late 90s because and they used the Tomahawk Chop as well. I actually don't like the Chiefs, but I do like the Tomahawk Chop. I think it's cool. That gets me going, man. And the whole chant and everything. So Florida State would be my low-key team that I root for.
I used to like Florida State, too.
There you go. And that concludes the college football blitz thingy.